Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Louisiana's long nightmare has finally come to an end. Good morning. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also catch us on the Simulcast. That's right, KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. Also, LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to give us a call today, feel free. Pick up the phone, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We discussed it over the weekend that this is what was going to occur, that we anticipated this happening. Our guest last week from CrescentCitySports.com, Les East, kind of hinted at this, that he believed that this was going to happen over the weekend, and I felt the same way. That the Pels would have a trade with Anthony Davis done, in place, the framework done over the weekend. And sure enough, that's exactly what took place. It happens, and now it's all but set. Here's the recap of what the Pels were able to pull off. This is what David Griffin was able to do. He's able to ship Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, I know a lot of people are upset by this, but he gets himself a hell of a haul for this. They ship Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers. In return, they get multiple players. They're going to get, reports are that they're going to get Lonzo Ball.
Never lost.
Never lost.
Stay in your lane.
Brandon Ingram.
Never lost.
And Josh Hart.
Never lost.
They get three players. Three guys who started for the Lakers last year. And I've said this before. It's hard to judge if these current Laker players are garbage or not, because just how poorly the front office is ran and the development of players has been by the Lakers in the past 4 to 5 years. We saw this with Julius Randle, a player that they believed was not good enough, was not part of their future, and they were easily allowed to walk. Julius Randle, we saw, was nearly a double-double machine for the New Orleans Pelicans last season. Not an all-star, but a good player. D'Angelo Russell was a guy that they spent a lottery pick on. They shipped him out to the Brooklyn Nets. He turned into an all-star that helped lead a team to the Eastern Conference playoffs. Did so under the leadership of the gentleman who's now the general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans, by the way. So maybe the Pelicans front office knows a little bit something more than we do about exactly what the potential is about these assets that they're getting from the Lakers. Once again, they're getting Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Josh Hart. Here's the kicker for me. They're getting three first-round picks, including this year's number four overall pick. And you're thinking, okay, great. Well, those other picks, they must be protected. It's one of those deals where they're going to get this year's first-round pick, but, you know, you have LeBron James, you have Anthony Davis. They're going to go after another max free agent. You know, the Lakers are going to be really good. They're going to be a title contender. Those other first-round picks aren't going to mean anything. Well, I'm going to stop you right there. Because what happened was, is that those picks are, in fact, not as protected as you'd like to think they are. And this is where David Griffin went next level with this trade. They're not protected. The Pels also have the possibilities of being able to swap picks. Let me break it down for you. They get the number four pick this week on Thursday. Now, a top eight protected pick in 2021 becomes unprotected in 2022, which means that the Pelicans can say, okay, well, if this pick is protected in 2021, we'll just take your first-round unprotected pick in 2022. And then unprotected swap in 2023, which, once again, they can swap. Unprotected first-rounder in 2024. And unprotected swap in 2025. So what the Lakers did to get Anthony Davis, they gave the Pels not one, not two, but three starters. And for the Pels, all those guys probably won't start. I'd say Josh Hart's probably going to be a bench player, but still. They gave you three bodies. They gave you a top five pick this year and allowed the Pelicans to control how and where the Lakers draft all the way until 2025. 2025. The Pels really got unprotected first and two pick swaps during Zion's rookie extension and when LeBron is going to be almost 40 years old. Think about it like that. This isn't only, hey, this is going to benefit the Pels this year with the number four overall pick. And there's been some speculation that the Pels front office is going to flip that pick. They're going to take the fourth pick and maybe Lonzo Ball and get a veteran player, or just take the fourth pick and flip it for a veteran player, akin to what David Griffin did when he was the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And when they brought LeBron back, one of the first things he did is that he traded the top three pick that they had that year. I want to say maybe even the number one or the number two overall pick with Andrew Wiggins, and traded him to the Minnesota Timberwolves and got Kevin Love in return. Andrew Lopez, our good friend from NOLA.com, reported that Woj stated the Pelicans are going to shop that number four pick and try to turn it into a quality starter that they can plug into that lineup. Also expect there's a possibility that they are going to maybe shop Solomon Hill around as well, maybe get something for him. This is also something that Woj reported on yesterday. This goes to show you what David Griffin did and why he's so smart. This is what Woj is reporting. For now, the expectation is Anthony Davis trade will be completed on July 6th. League sources tell Bobby Marks and myself. Assuming Davis declines to void $4 million in a trade bonus, this leaves the Lakers with $23.7 million in cap space. There's a chance that could be amended to July 30th, but it's still July 6th for right now. You're thinking, well, why is that important? Well, as Woj further reports, if the Pelicans and Lakers waited until July 30th to complete the trade, The Lakers could have had $32.5 million in cap space. That's significant more. Enough to pursue a max-level free agent. As of right now, they can't. They're going to have to find a max-level free agent to take non-max-level money to make a big three there in Los Angeles. By waiting 30 days, the Lakers would be acting like a team over the cap and thus allowed to use a fourth overall pick and draft a salary.
Just
David Griffin just fleeced the Lakers. It's exactly what he did. He forced their hand, because now also reports came out that the reason why nothing got off the ground with the Boston Celtics is because the Celtics having Kyrie Irving leave, and reports are that he's not happy and that he doesn't want to come back, that they refused to give up Jason Tatum in a deal for Anthony Davis. And as soon as they said that they refused to give up Jason Tatum, David Griffin said, okay, we're done. And he went to the Lakers. And if you're Rob Pelinka, the man in charge of the Los Angeles Lakers right now, how does he not know? Like, how did no one tell him that the trade date was an important thing to negotiate when it comes to the team's salary cap? Like, how does he not know that? You know how he doesn't know that? Because he used to be an agent. So the Pels get three players. They put the screws to the Lakers for their own salary cap issues. And now they have assets that they can flip, whether that's draft picks this year or next year. They can negotiate. Maybe they take Lonzo Ball and flip him into something else. You do have some concerns about Brandon Ingram. He's got the blood clot issue, but from all reports are that that's been resolved. They could do something with Solomon Hill. And reports are coming out of New Orleans that David Griffin is not done, that expect the Pelicans to continue to be aggressive and do something else, whether it's one of the assets from the Lakers, those picks, or whatever, maybe one of those players and a combination of the players and the picks, that they are going to try to make another move in between now and draft night on Thursday. Do I expect them to hold on to the number four pick? No. I think there's teams that are interested in trading up. This would be a good opportunity for them to maybe go out and get themselves a veteran player. Mid-level veteran player. Doesn't have to be an all-star, but another wing player or maybe even a center would do well. Because you really want Zion to play the four for you. You don't want Zion to have to play the five. Put him at the four. I still can't believe that they're able to get the unprotected picks. Like, and then they can just swap. Oh, I don't like you. I don't like what you have this year, Lakers. We're going to swap with next year. And here's the thing. Everyone's thinking, oh, well, add Anthony Davis and LeBron James. It's going to be a gravy train on biscuit wheels in La La Land. They don't have the salary cap space right now to get another max player. And what's going to be around those three guys? Let's say they do get a third player. Who the hell's going to fill out their roster? They'll have no picks. They just traded three guys for one. They got LeBron James, Kyle Kuzma, and Anthony Davis. And then they'll sign another guy. As we've seen just last week, as we saw just last week, depth is what can help you win an NBA championship. The Warriors didn't have it, and they lost it to the Raptors, who had depth. Unbelievable. Still more moves to come. Plenty of moves to come, but wow. This is what Brian Windhorst had to say. Windhorst said the Lakers gave the Pelicans control of their picks for the next 5 to 7 years. Quote, "What they gave up for him is potentially scandalous. It's an unbelievable haul they gave up. It is the Nets-Celtics trade part two." And that trade, when the Nets traded with the Celtics to get Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and gave up all those first-round picks, some of them which Boston still has, put the Nets franchise back nearly half a decade. Brian Windhorst, who covers the NBA for the mothership, says this trade reminds him of that. It's that kind of fleece job that David Griffin just pulled off with the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll keep the AD to Lakers conversation moving forward up next. By the way, good morning to you, Cody Schutz.
Good morning.
There it is. We got to get the good mornings off in that first segment, man. We can't start off the show.
You're right. You're right.
Or the week that way. Got to get you.
I got to push the LeVar Ball button, so I'm happy.
You are. I'm happy. There was a big grin on your face for that. We'll talk more about AD to the Lakers and what the Pels got in return coming up after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to give us a call, pick up the phone, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Anthony Davis is headed to La La Land. Someone already put up a mural in Los Angeles. That worked out well for LeBron James last year, too, when they started defacing the mural. And then they finally just painted over it and said, okay, no more murals. So AD is gone. And what does this look like now for the team? This team is going to be vastly different in the next 4 days. As I mentioned before in the opening segment, Julius Randle opted out. He's not doing the player buy-in. He's going to test free agency, which he should. He had a very good year, his best year as a pro. After many believe that he was washed up when he played for the Los Angeles Lakers, he comes to New Orleans. He's nearly a double-double machine. He's going to test free agency, as he should. You'd like to see them possibly try to get him to come back. Maybe that can happen. Maybe it won't. We know Randle enjoyed his time in New Orleans. But, look, if someone goes out there and tries to make him a great offer, you can't blame the guy for going out there and trying to test the free agent waters. But let's say Randle doesn't come back. As the assets that they have in return, so you'll have Ball and Drew Holiday as your guards, Ingram and Zion as your forwards, because you're taking Zion Williamson, number one overall. And then that leaves an open spot at the five. And then you have to develop a lot of depth. I would expect Solomon Hill to probably be shipped out. He's entering the last year of his contract. Pels will likely ship him out for maybe like a second-round pick or cash considerations or something like that. That may not happen before the draft. They may wait. Hell, they may wait until the trade deadline during the season, but I don't expect Solomon Hill to be on the team towards the end of next season. Let's just put it that way. They'll have the cap space to go after someone. But let's say they just stand pat right now. Don't do anything with that number four overall pick, which I see them doing something with the number four overall pick. Don't be surprised if they take the number four overall pick and maybe one of those other players and flip them into something. But let's say they don't, then they can still approach a free agency, get themselves a big that can shoot. How about one of the Lopez brothers? Guy that can rebound and can still shoot the basketball, can shoot you a little 10 to 12 foot jump shot. That could be a nice addition. With Ingram and Zion, I don't even mind them if they do decide to keep Lonzo. Because Lonzo plays good defense, and I think that's what Alvin Gentry wants. And you're not needing Lonzo to be able to shoot. Drew Holiday can shoot. But defensively, if that's four of your starting five, it's going to be a little nasty. Because Lonzo can play defense. We know Drew Holiday is all-world defensively. Zion has the skill set to be a good defender, and Ingram can play pretty good defense. These Laker guys actually play pretty good defense, believe it or not. So this is the trade. This is what we expected. Thought it was going to be Boston, but L.A. made the best offer, or rather, they allowed themselves to be fleeced by David Griffin. And as the vice president of basketball operations and the man in charge of running the New Orleans Pelicans, that's what you want him to do. Regardless of what you think of Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, by the way, Josh Hart is already embracing New Orleans, asking about the favorite, what's the best beignet places in New Orleans. Okay, he's already rocking a Pelicans t-shirt. My man is ready to come to New Orleans for a fresh start. Regardless of what kind of talent you think they are, if they're not, if they're going to end up being all-stars or whatever it might be, that's irrelevant. Because you had a guy that was going to walk in a year, no matter what, he wasn't coming back. You get three players. Even if Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Josh Hart don't turn out to be anything, they never turn out to be all-stars, they're just warm bodies. At least you got warm bodies in return, and more importantly, you got those picks. And now you have the flexibility to lay a foundation around Zion Williamson in years moving forward. And you can also continue to put it to the Los Angeles Lakers, who are going to try to build something strictly out of free agency, which is not how you operate in the modern NBA. You just don't. You build up, and then you add free agents. They have no young core now. They have Kyle Kuzma, and that's it. But when we talk about this trade, we also got to talk about who else is coming to the city of New Orleans, Cody Schutz. It's the big baller himself. Oh, sorry, LeVar Ball. He'll be coming as well.
We'll get to that.
Oh, we will. We will. He had something to say about that. I know everyone is stunned LeVar Ball had something to say about his son being traded to the New Orleans Pelicans.
It probably should be checked for cussies before I just throw this.
That's why.
LeVar, probably not happy. Probably not happy.
Of course, he was braggadocious, as you can imagine. Never going to win anything. Can't wait for that guy. I kind of hope he is in New Orleans. I just kind of do. Part of me does. We'll talk about more about the Anthony Davis trade to the Los Angeles Lakers throughout today's show. But coming up next, U.S. Open. Brooks Koepka made it interesting on Sunday. Nearly pulled off the three-peat. Fell just short. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game.
I never let myself get ahead, and I never really thought the tournament was over. So once that went in, it all kind of came out of me. It was special, you know, to finish it off here at Pebble Beach.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. That, ladies and gentlemen, is your U.S. Open champion, Gary Woodland, a former Division II basketball star turned golfer. Breaks through, wins his first major championship. Holds off a charge by Brooks Koepka, who did not start off great the first few days of this U.S. Open. He was your two-time defending champion, trying to become the first three-peat champion in U.S. Open history since 1905. He made a charge, shot three under on the final day yesterday there at Pebble Beach, as did John Rahm, who made a run as well, the Spaniard with the German name. But Woodland made some big shots down the stretch, shot two under for the final round, finishes the tournament 13 under par, three strokes better than Brooks Koepka, who finishes as runner-up with John Rahm tied for third. And it was an interesting U.S. Open. You know, we started off day one, Ricky Fowler had a great first day. Remember, he shot 5 under par. He was tied for the lead. He was the leader in the clubhouse. And then Justin Rose finished the day at 6 under. And there were some low scores on day number one. And very much for the first two rounds and really half of round number three on Saturday, this did not play like a U.S. Open course or U.S. Open. You know, the U.S. Opens are known for being notoriously difficult. The conditions, the wind, the course itself, the rough. And Pebble Beach played soft, and it played very forgiving. But as the weekend progressed, the course became less forgiving and far more difficult and started weeding it out. Justin Rose, for example, who I thought after the round one on Thursday appeared primed to win his second major. His first came at the 2013 U.S. Open. But he faltered. Gave away shots left and right, and some of the bigger names, Ricky Fowler, faded back. Tiger Woods was never really in contention. Brooks Koepka really wasn't in contention until he made a charge there late Saturday and then on Sunday to put himself in a position to try to three-peat. Dustin Johnson not in the mix. Rory McIlroy faded on Sunday. He shot over par on Sunday. And the U.S. Open became one of attrition, like it should, because it's the U.S. Open. But Gary Woodland is the U.S. Open champion. No one had that, of course. Myself and Rob Spires will talk more about the U.S. Open on tomorrow's Chip Shots with Rob Spires from 9 to 10 right here on 103.7 The Game. But a former college basketball player, a good one at the D2 level, is the U.S. Open champion. 35 years old, very much a bit of a journeyman, late bloomer, if you'd like to say. Well, don't be surprised if this young man, I say young man, he's younger than me, young man, this may be his only major championship. This happens. This is what makes golf so great, is that you'll have these guys. Remember Danny Willett? Wins a major, disappears. You hope this is not going to be the case for Gary Woodland, but he could be. 35 years old, former Division II basketball star, held off Brooks Koepka. On Sunday in the final round of the U.S. Open, hit a remarkable 3-wood on the par 5 14th. And then his best shot maybe of the tournament was that chip shot on the green on the par 3 17th. And he was able to hold off Koepka, who's a 4-time major winner in this previous 8 start, the guy who is the back-to-back U.S. Open champion. And then he drained the long birdie putt there on Pebble Beach's iconic 18th hole. Final score of 13 under, by the way, to put things in perspective, is one stroke better than Tiger Woods' 2000 score at Pebble in the most dominant performance the game has ever seen. That's kind of crazy. Gary Woodland's your champion. U.S. Open champion. Koepka did make a run at it, which was interesting to see. Definitely gave Sunday a little bit more juice. But, I mean, you look at the guys that had a chance. 35-year-old journeyman wins the U.S. Open by 3 strokes. Koepka finishes as runner-up. John Rahm, 7 under for the tournament. He shot 3 under on Sunday. He tried to make a push. Justin Rose shot 3 over. If he just would have shot even par on Sunday, he would have been tied for second. Plus 3 on the final round of the U.S. Open. He expressed his frustration afterwards. Not as frustrating as Justin Rose might have been. he did not express his frustration as well or as bold as our buddy Patrick Reed did. Oh, no. No, no. Patrick got frustrated with himself over the weekend and decided to, Baton Rouge native, decided to apparently try his best Bo Jackson impersonation with one of his clubs.
Not exactly Bo Jackson, but man.
Patrick Reed, who tends to have a temper, major champion, Ryder Cup star, he smashed his club over his knee in frustration. It was like, oh, way to be in control of your emotions there, Patrick. As I said, John Rahm tied for third with Justin Rose. Justin Rose was +3 on Sunday. Adam Scott recovered on Sunday for 3-under round. But a bad second and third round kind of put him out of the mix. But he still finished tied for seventh. Rory McIlroy was +1 on Sunday. We thought his Sunday woes were behind him with the way that he performed at the RBC Canadian Open the week before, which he won in dominating fashion. But he was +1 on Sunday. He was preventing himself from being in the mix. Speaking of Danny Willett, there he is, tied for 12th. Shot even par. Webb Simpson had him a hell of a Sunday. Shot 5-under par on Sunday. Got himself tied for 16th. Matt Kuchar, a guy I liked for this tournament. It was in the mix for a couple of rounds. He faded over the weekend, +2 on Sunday. Tied for 16th. Jason Day looked pretty good over the weekend. Remember, he had Stevie Williams, Tiger Woods, former and infamous caddy, had him on the bag for the U.S. Open this week. Shot 2-under on Sunday to get 2-under par, tied for 21st for the tournament. Tiger Woods was 2-under par on Sunday, finished 2-under par for the tournament. So since winning the Masters, he missed the cut at the PGA Championship, and he finished outside the top 20 at the U.S. Open. Everyone that thought that his Masters victory was going to lead him to become early 2000s era Tiger Woods, where he was going to dominate and put together the Tiger Slam, you're fooling yourselves. The Masters was a terrific moment, maybe the best sports moment of the year so far. Doesn't mean that Tiger Woods is ever going to become the old Tiger Woods that we all loved and revered and made must-see television. It's not going to happen. He's older now. His body's not going to allow him to be that guy. Patrick Reed, who smashed his club. He actually shot 3-under on Sunday. After all the club smashing, maybe that helped him. Maybe he got it out of his system. He got all that anger out of his system. He shot 3-under on Sunday. That got him to even par for the tournament. Martin Kaymer, who was near the top of the leaderboard early on in this tournament, finishes tied for 35th. He struggled over rounds 2 and 3. Shot 1-under on Sunday to get to +1. Ricky Fowler, who was leading the tournament on Thursday until Justin Rose came in the clubhouse with that 6-under first round score, finishes the U.S. Open 2-over par, tied for 43rd. Lefty Sergio tied for 52nd. Jordan Spieth, there's another one. I thought he was my favorite to win. My long shot to win the U.S. Open was Martin Kaymer. My mid-level guy was Matt Kuchar. And my favorite to win was Jordan Spieth. I played this game very poorly, is what I'm trying to say. Spieth, he finished tied for 65th, 6-over par for the tournament. He was 5-over on Sunday. I have no idea what's going on with Spieth. looked like he got things together, and it just got away from him. We didn't have a chance to talk about it on Friday because it happened after we got off the air, but guys like Justin Thomas missed the cut. David Toms, Louisiana's own, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, making the transition to the Senior Tour. He's already on the Senior Tour. He missed the cut. Ian Poulter missed the cut. Tony Finau, guy that Rob Spires likes a lot, he missed the cut as well. Mike Weir, Canada's own. Canada's favorite son. We'll ask Rob Spires if Mike Weir is actually Canada's favorite son or not.
No, that's Drake.
Oh, that is Drake. Bubba Watson. These are guys that are former major champions. Plus nine, he missed the cut. Ugh. I mean, Pebble did eat people's lunch. Not going to lie. But the young man at the top of the golf world right now is Gary Woodland, former Division II basketball star turned journeyman golfer. 13 under par, claims the U.S. Open there at Pebble Beach. Congratulations to him. And we'll see if he can build that momentum and carry that over to the Open Championship held in Great Britain, which is now your fourth and final major of the season. We'll talk more about the U.S. Open on tomorrow's Chip Shot with Rob Spires from 9 to 10 right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, though, Jakinen Gant, he had a workout recently with the Memphis Grizzlies, but he also had another one over the weekend with the Indiana Pacers. Could the former Raging Cajun star find himself drafted on Thursday night in the second round? Oh, we'll dive in right here on 103.7 The Game.
You were so productive after transferring to Louisiana Lafayette. What allowed you to succeed there?
Just focusing and just locking down and just being in the gym, just being in the gym and just focusing on myself and just working hard and just really believing in myself.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. That, ladies and gentlemen, was Jakinen Gant answering questions from media people from the Indiana Pacers, who he had a workout for over the weekend. Now, this is the second NBA franchise that's worked out the former Raging Cajun star. Memphis Grizzlies were one of the first ones. It was the first team to work him out that we know of. Second team here being the Pacers. And Gant has a lot of potential. Once again, two-time Sun Belt Conference Defensive Player of the Year. He was tremendous in his 2 years with the Raging Cajuns. Remember, he began his career, the Springfield, Georgia native, began his career for the University of Missouri. He played there for 2 seasons, appeared in 53 games with 10 starts before transferring, had to sit out the 2016-17 season. As a junior, he helped UL to that regular season championship, averaged 13.5 points per game, nearly 2.5 blocks, and almost 6 rebounds as a junior. Last year, even better. More minutes, averaged 32.3 minutes, 20.5 points per game, 2.65 blocks per game, and 8.61 rebounds per game. Got a little bit stronger, a little bit quicker. He's a little thin, 6'8", only 210, but he's a natural shot blocker. And he can shoot a little bit. And that makes him someone that NBA teams are going to give a hard look at. Now, just because he's having workouts with the likes of the Pacers and the Grizzlies, does that mean that he's going to be drafted Thursday night in either the first round or the second round? No. But and I've said this before, I do believe Jakeen and Gant has a great opportunity to play in the NBA. Now, it may be in the G League to start off with. It would be great if the former Raging Cajun star became only the second player since Elfrid Payton to be drafted. Remember, Elfrid Payton was a lottery pick for the Orlando Magic. Now, Sean Long went undrafted, if you remember. Once again, the NBA only has two rounds of their draft. It's not like the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever. It's only two rounds. That's it. Then it's a wrap. But the NBA does have the G League now, which they send a lot of their second-round draft picks to or undrafted guys and develop them in the G League, formerly known as the D League. Could I see Jakeen and Kant doing what Sean Long did and going undrafted and being signed to a G League contract and then work his way up to the NBA? Absolutely, because that's what Sean Long did, remember? Sean Long, the Philadelphia 76ers, signed him to a G League contract. He performed extremely well for their G League team, moved up to the big roster, played in, I want to say, a dozen or 15 games. Played pretty well. But the 76ers didn't bring him back, and now he's playing pro ball down under. First with the New Zealand team, and now he just got signed, re-upped with another team in that same league down there based out of Australia. Frank Bartley's playing in Canada, went undrafted playing. So, look, Jakeen and Kant's going to be playing pro ball. Will it be on the same level as, say, what Frank Bartley's doing playing in the Canadian League or what Sean Long is doing, who went undrafted, got signed to the G League, made his way up to the NBA, and now is down and playing in Australia? Possibly. But the fact that the Memphis Grizzlies and the Indiana Pacers, who have picks coming up in this week's draft on Thursday night, are taking a hard look at the young man or interviewing him, bodes well. Bodes well for the former Raging Cajun star. So we'll have to see if Jakeen and Kant hears his name called on Thursday night and becomes the first Raging Cajun player drafted in the NBA since Elfrid Payton was a lottery pick. That'll do it for the first hour of RP3 and Company. When we come back, more Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers talk right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber, 133 and 1133 in high definition. Just to let you know, coming up at 7:32, he joins us every Monday from TigerDetails.com. Jarrett Rozier is going to be joining us. We're going to talk a little LSU recruiting with him. So make sure to tune in for that. We led off today's show, of course, talking about Anthony Davis being traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. We want to get your reaction to this. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you'd like. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111.
Now, Ray, before you go any farther on this, there is
One
person's reaction that I am very, very excited about hearing here, if you don't mind. And maybe it's not so much their reaction on Anthony Davis going to the Lakers, but maybe it's more so a reaction on Lonzo Ball going to the Pelicans.
before you play it, and I'm happy you did that before you play it. Once again, Anthony Davis traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Pels get Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, who's already rocking Pelicans gear, by the way, and asking about the best beignet places. Big up to him. He becomes my favorite new Pelican. And a slew of picks, including this year's number 4 overall pick and multiple other picks and the ability to swap picks if they're protected or not. Okay, so they can pretty much dictate what the Lakers do for the next 5 years with their draft picks. So a terrific haul by David Griffin, the vice president of basketball operations. But as Cody alluded to, what we really need to know, and you can give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We'll also throw it up on the Twitter. Do you think the Pels will make another move before Thursday night's draft? I think they're going to do something else. I think they're going to flip one of these picks, possibly even Lonzo Ball. We'll see. We'll throw that up on the Twitter. Do you think the Pelicans are going to make yet another move before Thursday night's draft? Yes or no? We'll throw that up and let you vote on it. Maybe that move, if it does happen, will include Lonzo Ball. So maybe someone will have a microphone in the face of LaVar Ball once again. I kind of want LaVar Ball to come to New Orleans. That's just me, because I think New Orleans would either love him or just run him out of town. Either one would be terrific for me. But LaVar Ball was asked outside of a game for one of his other sons, by the way. I don't know where this video was caught at. I think it looks like it was on an iPhone. He was asked outside of a gym in some random place, maybe Bulgaria is where his boy is playing. I'm not for sure. Big baller brand himself. This is what his thoughts were about the Anthony Davis trade to the Los Angeles Lakers involving his son, Lonzo.
Like I said, I guarantee it'll be the worst move the Lakers ever did in their life, and they'll never win another championship. Guaranteed. They're going to regret it. I'm going to have fun with it. Because I told y'all it was crashing down. Now it completely crashed, but at least my son got off the boat before the thing exploded. I gave him a chance. You can rewind it and go back. And I said, if you get the three Ball brothers, you're going to survive this. You let them go, boy, it's going to be a cold day in hell. Trust and believe. I don't care where Lonzo plays. Like I said about it, I just want him to be healthy. I want him to play. And it's better to go somewhere where you can just play and do your thing and be that guy instead of having all these question marks behind you. And once you don't believe in him, it's kind of hard to come back and be like, oh, we believe in him now, because now we don't know if you're true or not. You had the first chance to believe in him, and you didn't. So guess what? Time to go.
Someone came up. Bravo to whoever got that
right.
Video. It's in the wind outside of a gymnasium somewhere. So, I have nowhere where the hell that's at.
Some small island in the Pacific somewhere. Like, who knows?
I think, and they're just great. randomly find LaVar Ball as the. Can you imagine being LaVar Ball and you find out via your phone? There's just a random notification on your phone. Lonzo Ball's been traded to the New Orleans Pelicans.
He sees the Woj bomb like everybody else. Like, that's how he finds out. I mean, I think it's really funny too how his take is that, oh, well, the Lakers have burned their bridge with Lonzo. We ain't going back. Like, that's what the worry is. That's the concern.
And I love how he made it out like he told him.
Oh, he did tell him, though. It worked out perfectly for him.
He told him, if you would have just, signed my other two sons.
Yeah. You'd have been championships all day. But the best part about it is there's nothing you can do to go back and prove that, like, he's wrong. You know what I mean? That's why, like, it's great for LaVar right now, because he's like, I told them what to do. They didn't get my three boys, and now look at them. And it's like, LaVar, your three kids wouldn't have done anything for that team. Prove it.
What's going to be worse? What's worse? If Lonzo Ball becomes nothing for the – let's say he stays with the Pels. I don't know if that's a possibility. He does play pretty good defense, so they could keep him. But let's say they don't. Let's say they ship him out with that number 4 pick and get a veteran all-star in return or something. They work their magic, okay? Yeah. But let's say that's what you hope happened. But let's say that doesn't happen. Let's say he's a Pel. He's never an all-star. He's just an average NBA point guard. Is that worse or better, Cody, than him like coming to New Orleans and becoming an all-star. Because if Lonzo Ball becomes an all-star, we'll never get rid of LaVar Ball. Ever.
That's okay with me.
Ever. You're okay with
I'm
that.
I'm all right with that. I LaVar Ball, I find him hilarious because, like, even if he believes what he says, which I actually, in my opinion, I think LaVar Ball believes everything he says. I also think LaVar Ball knows that he's a little bit, you know, unhinged. But I think he, but
one way,
the words that come out of his mouth, I think he believes. But I mean, I think he's hilarious. For what it's worth, I love that he says the Lakers would win all the championships if they have all three of my son. I mean, that's who else says stuff like that? And I mean,
one of the boys can't even get on a G League team. Like, no, that, like, I mean, one of them, like,
didn't even go to college.
Didn't even go to college and got arrested for shoplifting or whatever it was.
Yeah, that's the thing. I forgot that that did happen.
And then the other kid is the one, the other brother is the one that scored all those points because they kept feeding the ball.
Yeah, in that, like, in high AAU school? Or high school
game? Yeah, it was like high school. He scored like 85 points or something stupid.
Right.
Or close to, it was close to 100 points. And, like, he just kept jacking up threes. He's not going to college either.
No. I mean, I'm fine. Like, at the end of the day, I think LaVar Ball in New Orleans surrounding my basketball team is gonna be fun.
Do you believe that Lonzo Ball, if his daddy is rolling up to the crib, do you think Lonzo has his boys say, no, he's not here, you have to go away? Like, do you think it's just one of those situations where LaVar plays it up big for all the cameras, but behind the scenes, Lonzo's like, no, Dad, no, go home. I don't got time for you right now.
I mean,
I don't got time for you right now.
When the whole LaVar Ball phenomenon was, like, first becoming a thing, and Lonzo was coming into the league, or it was his senior year in college or whatever.
No, he was only the one year, but he
his
played
final
the one year
in college. Yeah, and when all that was first a thing, that question was asked to Lonzo a lot. Like, what are your thoughts? And I mean, his response all the time was, I mean, he's my dad. I love him. What am I going to do? Behind closed doors, I think he, at this point where we are now, I think he tells his, I don't think there's really much conversation about it. Because Lonzo is where he's going to be. He's in the league already. Mission accomplished for LaVar with that kid. LaVar, I think, has now got his attention kind of turned elsewhere.
To himself. Because, well, those other two boys aren't getting into the league. They just don't have the skill set.
But
Lonzo's the best
still,
player of the three.
That's what he's still attempting to do. Because those kids are, what, 17 to 19 years old?
Or are building his brand.
Well, I think that brand is, I mean, it's not dead. It's not dead. It's not. But it's not, I don't think what they've
got. Do
not
you have some
Nike
big baller shoes at the house?
I don't. It's not the new Nike like they thought it was going to, or they claimed it was going to be, though. That's for sure. I mean, who have they signed to their shoe company besides Lonzo?
But then Lonzo left.
Is he not even wearing the big ball?
I don't even think he's part of it now. I don't even think he's part of it now.
Well, that tells you all you need
to know. I think how that relationship goes down is that Lonzo calls up Mama Ball.
Who you never hear from. I guess she's around, I suppose.
She's quiet, which means she rules the roost.
Right.
LaVar gets to have his fun in front of the cameras, but you know he's sleeping on the couch more than a few times. Because she just looks at him and just gives him that eye. That look like, you big dummy.
I mean, the publicity he gets for himself and his family, his brand, his kid. I mean, that's all. It's a lot of publicity. It just, America likes train wrecks. Don't get me wrong. America likes seeing things like that. But in my humble opinion, I don't feel like America wants to spend money on something like that. You know what I mean? We all love watching LaVar Ball do these crazy things that he does, and we all love laughing at him, and we think he's ridiculous, and we, you know, get our opinions formed. But I just don't think that that type of publicity, and it is, but I don't think it equates into people going into their pocket and spending money, which is what LaVar Ball's ultimate goal was with the Big Baller brand. And yeah, you get your name in the news, but getting your name in the news, yeah, people know you now. They know who you are. Maybe they know of Big Baller brand. But that type of thing to me doesn't, I'm not going to go into my pocket. Now, dude, this guy is insane. You should hear some of the stuff he says. Here's $50. Like, that's just not, I don't think it's going to work like that.
Here's $50.
And I mean, the $50, that's just for a pair of socks.
That is just a pair of socks. You know what? We're going to throw up another Twitter poll question. Are you, Pels fans, Louisiana sports fans?
People of the world.
People of the world. Are you happy LaVar Ball, not Lonzo Ball, we don't care about Lonzo Ball coming to be a member of the Pelicans. Are you happy about LaVar Ball coming to New Orleans? Yes or no? I want to hear from you. Because part of me feels like New Orleans will embrace him and his bravado and everything like that. But also New Orleans will not be afraid, and the folks down in the 504 will not be afraid to put him in check, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, LaVar could do a lot of that boasting all he wants, but then the folks down there will be like, hey, man, this isn't, you know, this isn't Cali. You're in New Orleans. So we want to hear from you. Do you think New Orleans will embrace, right, embrace LaVar Ball? Cody, what do you think? You think they would?
It depends on initially, yeah. I think initially, yes. If he comes in and he starts bad mouth, let's say this season gets off, this upcoming season gets off to a bit of a slow start, and LaVar starts running his mouth, you know, then the city will turn on him quickly. So it's one of those, I think, initially, New Orleans will welcome him in and say, hey, you know, happy to have you and your son in the city. Let's do some good things. If we win championships together or make good runs and competitive, respectable teams, then I think everybody will be A-okay with LaVar Ball. But like I said, if things kind of start off slow and the team's under 500 for a little bit at the beginning of the season and maybe not performing to their best abilities, and especially if Lonzo isn't performing, if Lonzo just completely sucks, and then LaVar is still running his mouth saying, oh my God, we're in New Orleans, you can't win here, blah, blah, this and that, then, I mean, not necessarily a hot take I'm giving here, but I think the city would very quickly turn on one LaVar Ball, and it would be very hard for him to go anywhere in New Orleans.
Here's the other thing for him. It's benefited him for his son playing for the Lakers because they were from Los Angeles. His son played at UCLA. It's a great media market, ton of exposure, right? Isn't New Orleans the smallest TV market in the NBA? Or the next to last TV market in the NBA?
It's got to be. I mean, I don't know.
So, you know, for his brand, not so much. Now, seeing him take part in like a second line, that's what amuses me. Like, I could just see LaVar just embracing the culture and the swag of New Orleans. That's what I think he would do.
City, I don't know about TV market. I can try to find that in a little bit. But city-wise, New Orleans is the fourth smallest city in the NBA.
There you go.
Orlando is smaller. The Utah Jazz, their market is smaller. And then the New Jersey Nets is the smallest. But that's in that tri-state area, so I don't know how the TV market exactly works for the New Jersey.
New Jersey. So, yeah, right now, as it stands right now, Lonzo Ball is part of that package that is coming. But could the Pels be moving Lonzo and number 4 pick possibly? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I feel like the Pels are going to be making another move, and it could be with one of those assets that they received from the Los Angeles Lakers. But we'll see. Hey, just a reminder, the good brother Ben Love, his weekly reboot podcast, he's got a new episode up right now. You can go check it out. It's about father-son duos in sports history. We got a couple local ties with that as well. So make sure to go check out the weekly reboot podcast with Ben Love, presented by Cigar Cove. It's up on the 103.7 The Game website right now. When we come back, a former LSU Tiger and a NOLA brother made his big league debut yesterday and did so by getting a hit. We'll dive right into it when we come back right here on 103.7 The Game.
That was a base hit. Congratulations.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Austin Nola. Was there anyone that had a better weekend than that young man? There in Oakland at the Coliseum, Austin Nola making his Major League Baseball debut got a hit in his very first at-bat. Able to hit the ball, ground ball that got into the outfield, got into right field, to be exact, and a group of about a dozen family and friends erupted in approval from the stands there in Oakland. And Nola turned to them and pointed to the group that featured his mother and his father, his wife, and her parents, and a few other friends. He said afterwards, it was phenomenal. There are a few Cajuns down there. Austin Nola, of course, is the Louisiana native and brother of Aaron Nola. Got his first Major League Baseball hit in his first plate appearance. I'll tell you how crazy this was for Nola, who's been a career journeyman in the minor leagues. So, how did he get called up to the Seattle Mariners? Well, because they are fading, they decided to trade Edwin Encarnacion to the New York Yankees before Saturday night's game against the A's. So Nola, who was playing for AAA Tacoma, flew from Austin, Texas to the Bay Area on Saturday and was immediately inserted into the starting lineup. Can you imagine what that's like? I'm getting ready. I'm on a road trip for AAA Tacoma. Hey, Austin, get the call, brother. Pack your bags. Actually, you don't even have time to pack your bags. Just run to the airport. Get on a plane because you have to go to Oakland to go play in a game tonight. Actually, he did not play on Saturday. They thankfully allowed him to get prepared. First indications were that he was going to have to play on Saturday. But he actually played on Sunday, made his official start on Father's Day. And Nola said, quote, it doesn't get any better. I can't wait to see my father and give him a hug. And this is just how this works sometimes. This is what makes baseball so great is these kind of stories. Look, Seattle signed him for depth in the offseason, hoping to use him as a backup catcher and part-time infielder only with their AAA ball club. The Mariners had no plans of having this guy be called up. I mean, he's kicked around the minor leagues since the Blue Jays selected him in the 31st round of the draft in 2011, and of course, Nola played at LSU just like his brother did. He's played in 8 seasons in the minors, 773 minor league games. And he finally gets the call up to the show. And what does he do? He gets a hit in his very first at-bat. Quote, I wouldn't trade it for anything, Nola said. It's been fun. I try to enjoy it every day. I don't look at the future or the past. I'm here right now. And I learned so much through my time at each level. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I came up in the minor leagues as a shortstop, transitioned to catcher, and now I'm playing first base today. You can't plan that. You really can't. But credit to Nola, because he put himself in this position. He changed his swing, his mechanics of his actual swing, and he began producing at the AAA level for Seattle's team there in Tacoma. He was batting .327 with 36 runs, 15 doubles and a triple, 7 home runs, and 37 RBIs in 55 games. So the guy can flat out play in the AAA level. But with Edwin traded to the Yankees and Ryan Healy still on the injured list, the Mariners had no choice but to call up the young man, the former LSU Tiger, who got to get to the show, got to play in the game, and got a base hit in his very first at-bat. So congratulations to the former Tiger for having that tremendous day yesterday on Father's Day nonetheless. When we come back on RP3 and Company, we'll talk with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com, giving us the latest, greatest updates involving LSU recruiting right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Right now it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of the week, as we always do. He is the man who covers LSU recruiting like none other. From TigerDetails.com, our good friend, Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, man. Doing pretty well. Happy to join y'all to kick off the week, as always.
Jarrett, let's start off. I know you've been just crisscrossing the country, some of it for personal personal reasons, other for business. You keeping your fingers kind of keeping connected with everything going on with recruiting. A lot of activity this time of year. In the month of June, it tends to be a flurry of activity, especially nowadays. Let's just dive right in. I know we were talking about it on last week's show with the numbers reaching so high with commits and recruits making their announcements and everything like that. But let's talk a little bit about a young man, Cortland Ford, ended up decommitting last week. What kind of update can you give us on that concerning Ford and LSU?
Yeah, just like we talked about last week after that little flurry of commitments from last Thursday to Sunday, the Tigers were pushing up toward 20 commitments at that point. They, if you include the two JUCO guys that drew those hold that Tiger tweets from Coach Orgeron on Sunday, that would put them at 19. With still a lot of guys that are very high priorities for this year's class, undecided, uncommitted, and very much still in the mix. And so you had to start wondering what would happen from a number standpoint as they near that 25-man mark, still with so many key guys like Coy Moore and Jaquelin Roy and Jacoby Guillory and Jalen Lee and company all still out there with decisions yet to be made, and Cortland Ford appears to be the first guy that will be looking elsewhere for his potential college destination. I'm interested to see what that means from an offensive lineman standpoint. They've had some other guys for 2020 that they've remained in strong contact with, including notably Cedric Van Pran down in New Orleans at Warren Easton. I'm interested to see if they end up just going another way with a last offensive lineman spot or maybe just continue to focus those spots elsewhere with defensive line continuing to look like as critical a position for this class as any. That's been as much of a priority as really any position out there. And so that will be interesting to watch their approach with what positions they look at with some of these last spots, particularly now with Cortland Ford out of the mix, and then also who else maybe ends up being kind of an odd man out sort of situation. But at the same time, you and I were texting earlier this morning, one of those JUCO guys finally did announce, a day or two after the Orgeron tweets, the other guy, defensive back Marco Domeo from Blinn College in Texas, still hasn't made any announcements he's committed to LSU. In fact, middle of last week, he released a video dropping his top 8 colleges. And so that's continued to be kind of a weird situation. And he may end up not being a guy that they have in that mix. And so that might be one more spot that they have to continue to pursue than it was looking like this time last week.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, let's talk a little bit about LSU. They had some quality guys on campus this past weekend. They had that great lineman camp that they always have. Plus, they had the 7-on-7 tournament, which Holy Cross out of New Orleans ended up winning. What can you tell us who was on campus and any of those guys are closer to possibly committing to LSU?
Yeah, they, you know, it wasn't necessarily as huge a recruiting weekend as the camp a few weeks ago or the Elite Prospects camp that'll start later this week. But they did have, a lot of high school prospects back on campus in between for kind of a variety of different events. And anytime that you can get these guys on campus during the summer and have an opportunity to A, evaluate them, but B, also, let them feel more at home on your campus and with your facilities and see some of the things you have to offer. It's always a big positive. You know, I know folks were raving about Mason Smith, the rising junior from Terrebonne, Dekai Douglas' younger teammate on the defensive line, who has been a guy that for months now has really established himself as one of Louisiana's top 2021 prospects. And he's someone that LSU feels like they're in pretty good shape with for that next defensive line class. And a few others, of the older guys. You have Eric Taylor, a defensive lineman from Alabama, and then Patrick Jenkins, who we've talked about now a couple times in recent weeks after he got the LSU offer at that first camp. He's going to be an interesting one to watch out of John Arrett. Interesting to see if he ends up back on campus later this week. My expectation is that he will be, and he's one that I think LSU has gained a lot of ground on since that early June camp. And so those have been a couple of notable ones the last couple of days from that line camp for sure. Not involved in some of those bigger events. Elias Ricks and Major Burns, I don't know if I'd say somewhat quietly, because anytime those guys do much of anything, especially Elias, it starts to gain some attention. But those two guys were able to come to campus and put in some work with Corey Raymond, and I think that was big to see. Having the opportunity to have Elias on campus because he's a guy from California that hasn't had a chance to spend as much time over there as his counterpart in that workout, Major Burns. But also after Major's commitment, there were some fans that seemed to be a little bit concerned of what was going on with Elias Ricks, with some of the other defensive back commitments. Should they be concerned, with a guy from that far away? It's always more difficult to keep them on board than a local guy. And he's obviously a huge part of this LSU class. So to see him come out this past weekend, and the expectation is also that he will be on campus this weekend, and to see him building that relationship with Major Burns, I thought was pretty big.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, let's talk about this week. The LSU Elite Prospects Camp starts this Thursday. It's one of the biggest camps of the year for LSU guys. It's also the last big camp for the Tigers for the summer. Give us some of the big names that are going to be there starting on Thursday.
Yeah, I think the anticipation is that most of those top guys will be on hand. We talked after the early June camp about it being such a huge turnout, but there were some key guys from out of state who hadn't had a chance to make the trip, and that LSU was still feeling pretty comfortable with that dynamic because they were pushing for guys to come to this camp later in the month. So I think really all those guys we've been talking about who have been uncommitted, both some of those guys locally as well as more guys making trips from all over the region and to some degree all over the country, we can expect to more likely than not be there later this week. I know some guys are still trying to finalize some travel plans and things of that nature, but this weekend I think is one that's been circled on LSU calendars for quite a while. As much more recruiting activity and commitment activity has now been pushed into the summer because of just the transition of recruiting over these past couple of years of the early signing period. I think this is a weekend that they anticipate being a big one for them, both in terms of potentially, receiving some commitments in the next week or so. But if guys are still trying to make a decision and end up taking it, another week or so, just kind of making that last really big, strong impression before some folks make some end of June and early July announcements.
We're talking with Jared Rozier of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. You tweeted this last night and over the weekend, Jared, and I wanted to touch base with you because I found it to be extremely intriguing as well. Last year, the University of Virginia, the Cavaliers, who are not known as a very talented football program, they've had a couple of moments, but they struggle when it comes to the gridiron, always overshadowed by Virginia Tech. They signed two guys last year, Michael Hollins and a young man, last name Wicks, last year. This year, they're already getting guys left and right. They got the young man out of Alexandria Senior High, the defensive back Bud Clark. And now, apparently, they've received another commitment, this one from Helen Cox safety Donovan Johnson. How is VA, out of all the teams in the country, setting up a pipeline to Louisiana? How's that happening?
Yeah, so Virginia is one of those schools that has really capitalized the past couple of years on adding a couple Louisiana ties to the coaching staff and making Louisiana a priority in recruiting. Just like we've talked about in years past when Kansas added Tony Hall from Warren Easton and seeing some of the love there and seeing some guys go to UTSA since Frank Wilson has been there. You've seen Tennessee be one with David Johnson now up there that has been very involved in Louisiana. And for Virginia, Coach Bronco Mendenhall added a couple of guys to that staff. Ricky Brumfield, an Archbishop Shaw product who has been a coach around the country for a long time now, but is New Orleans native, still has a lot of really strong connections, down in his home state, as well as, and he's a special teams coordinator up at UVA now. And Justin Anderson is director of player personnel, a guy, he's not a Louisiana guy originally, but worked with Ricky Brumfield a few years back at Nicholls State. And so has had a chance to build some connections within the state during his coaching career as he was helping the Colonels recruit some guys here locally. And then a young guy, Jordan Arsenault, who's really just kind of breaking in. He's a guy that was playing, a guy out of E.D. White that was playing at Nicholls State back those years, a few years ago, and has had an opportunity as a regional scout for Virginia to really be involved in their Louisiana recruiting. And so you've seen Mike Hollins this past year and Dontavian Wicks from Plaquemine, a couple of Baton Rouge guys. They actually added a graduate transfer in Terrell Chapman, who had been out at Arizona State. And now the two guys you mentioned, Bud Clark and most recently over the weekend, Donovan Johnson from Helen Cox commits yesterday. And Donovan's a guy that had a lot of other schools that he was really liking for a while. And it looked to me in April, he was really heavily considering committing to either Arizona or Arizona State. And then in recent months, as he's had a chance to continue to build that relationship with the guys at Virginia, just kind of fell in love with things up there. And you could tell by that Memorial Day weekend 7-on-7 national championship tournament that he had really started to lean more towards Virginia, and then had a chance to go up there, take a visit, absolutely loved it, and ends up committing. And now you see Caleb Anderson, the East Feliciana athlete, who has really risen, on the recruiting radar this spring. He's coming off of a visit that he and his family really enjoyed this weekend too. And he's a guy that he set that visit to Virginia for this weekend before he set much of anything else. Was still figuring out his early June camps just days in advance, but knew he wanted to get to Virginia in the middle of the month. And so you can see the Cavaliers starting to build some strong traction there too. And it'll be interesting to see if maybe they add a sixth and even potentially seventh Louisiana guy just in the last 2 years since all those guys have joined the staff.
We're talking with Jared Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jared, one more quick question before we let you go, brother. the Honey Badger's little cousin, committed over the weekend. And another young man, Reginald Johnson, also committed. What can you tell us about Kai Matthew and Reginald Johnson?
Yeah, it's been a good week for some of those other Louisiana guys. Looking at what happened with Virginia, and then last week a couple of Rummel guys committing in Gavin Holmes to Colorado and Jordan Williams, South Alabama, and then most recently Kai, who is obviously a name that a lot of people know because of how major an athlete Kyron was when he was in college. He ends up picking Memphis. He was a guy that I think was in a situation where he had a lot of opportunities starting to pile up, including a couple SEC offers starting to fall into place. But I know was someone that Tulane was really after, and so I was interested to see if he was going to be a part of that impressive class that Tulane trying to put together, including some notable local guys who have had some SEC and Power Five opportunities, opting to stay closer to home. And so I think that's, if Memphis hangs on to Kai Matthew with the commitment yesterday, that's a huge get for those Tigers. And, you know, good for Kai, good young man, always a pleasure to work with, and always out there making plays, whether it be on Friday nights or this time of year on Saturdays, Saturdays during camp season. And then Reginald Tonk Johnson, another guy, he was picking up a lot of steam. He had Penn State come in recently. He had a few offers around the country, but ends up deciding that Houston is the place that he wants to be. And so just another good opportunity for a good Louisiana high school football player to go make his name elsewhere. Wasn't a guy that LSU was particularly materializing for, and so seems like he found himself a nice home where he's ready to go put up some numbers in Houston.
Jarrett, appreciate you making time for us as always. Try to get you a nap today at least, man. You earned it.
I was probably averaging somewhere between 3 to 5 hours of sleep for the past week, so I'm feeling it this morning, and I look forward to sleeping a lot tonight.
Well, Jarrett, man, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Ray.
It's Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com, breaking down the latest on LSU recruiting. Recruiting never ends, ladies and gentlemen. It used to be you only hear about it a couple times a year. Not anymore. It is 365 days a year. Jarrett breaking down everything concerning LSU football recruiting and other in-state prospects. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up hour number two right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW, Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's been a hell of a couple of weeks for Cody Hosey, the former Tulane superstar. He was drafted in the first round of the Major League Baseball Amateur Draft by the Los Angeles Dodgers. He went ahead and signed his contract. He's already locked up. That happened a few days ago. And then over the weekend as well, he picked up yet another All-American honor. His sixth first-team All-American honor for this past season. That makes him now the fifth time ever in Tulane baseball history, and the first time since 2003 that a Tulane player is a consensus All-American. So congratulations to Cody Hosey for claiming his sixth first-team All-American honor, and he becomes only the fifth Tulane player in Green Wave history to be a consensus All-American, and the first since 2003. So congratulations to him. Plus, he's already got his contract in the books. He's raring to go start his big league career. So congratulations to the former Green Wave star. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, hour number three, we're going to start it off on the right foot like we always do every Monday as we talk to our good friend from the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo, will join us right here on 103.7 The Game.
live and local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game, KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, and, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that it says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We start off today's show talking about Anthony Davis, the trade that's in place, shipping him to the Los Angeles Lakers. In return, they get three players and multiple picks and basically get to dictate what the Lakers do for the next 5 years concerning the draft. We'll talk more about that, the ins and outs of that deal, and possibly what the Pels can still do in between now and Thursday night's draft with Andrew Lopez of NOLA.com. He'll be joining us at 8:32. But right now, we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our next guest. He's part of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, which you can listen to every week right here on 103.7 The Game. It's our good friend, Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing, Ray?
Doing well. Had an enjoyable weekend. Recharged the batteries, so to speak, and raring to go. Now, look, I know we don't have any real baseball talk going on over the weekend because obviously the Tigers are not in Omaha, but Paul Menary did have his kind of yearly recap presser late last week. I'd love to dive right into that with you, Jeff. Just your initial thoughts on what Paul had to say concerning the season, the team, and moving forward. What stood out to you?
Well, one of the things he plans on doing is making an adjustment to the roster and not carry so many pitchers as he did this past season. Part of the problem was that they had four guys on the roster this past season who never threw a single pitch this year because of injury. So I think they're going to look to, one, try to make sure guys stay healthy. By doing that, by having 20 pitchers on the roster, and again, four of them weren't really available to pitch at all to you, that really limited their flexibility when it came to their position players. And next year's roster, or at least the starting lineup, the starting eight that you would have out there as far as your position players, and even the DH for that matter, I mean, you don't have as many spots that are going to be locked up going into next season as you did having going into the 2019 season. I mean, you knew at this time last year, well, as long as Zach Watson and Antoine Duplantis were coming back, you knew next year your starting outfield would be Zach Watson, Zach Watson, Daniel Cabrera, and Antoine Duplantis. You knew that for sure. You knew that Josh Smith would be your starting shortstop. Brent Broussard was likely your second baseman. So there wasn't many positions open last year. Next season, really hard to say. I mean, you know, Gavin DiGiacomo is going to be out there and is starting somewhere in the outfield, most likely center field. You know, Cade Beloso is going to be in the lineup. You know, Daniel Cabrera is going to be in the lineup. Salud Garza, if he does come back, he'll be back. But outside of that, you're still looking at half of your starting nine outside of the pitcher that you really don't know who's going to be starter. So you need to have some battles there, and you need to have some flexibility in case you have situations like you did this past season where you have players that are not productive, and you can make moves here and there. So I think that was big. I mean, Paul Menary defended the injuries. talked about how Alan Dunn has been at LSU, I think since 2012, I think is the right number or right year. And really, it's just been the last 2 years where they've had a rash of injuries. So I don't feel that Palmieri feels like LSU is doing anything to these pitchers that are creating the arm injuries. A lot of these injuries are pre-existing, and they pop up once they get to the collegiate level. And then I guess the other big thing was a lot of these guys that, you know, the Landon Marcells of the world, the Cole Henrys, even Eric Walker, they're going to take the summer off, rest up. And, you know, next year the pitching staff is going to be, as it is every year, but it's going to be so key next year because they're not going to be as experienced out on the field as they were this past season. They need to have a healthy group of pitchers next season because that's what they'll really rely on. And if these guys are healthy, they finally have a chance to get that team ERA below four, where it's been hovering above four the last couple of seasons.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, let's talk about the pitchers because I found that, you know, he came right out and he was like, yeah, the pitchers are going to be shut down. You know, these guys are not going to be, they're not going to be utilized during the summer. They're going to be resting. Does that indicate to you, Jeff, that they're going to take a different approach because the arm soreness and the injuries to the pitching staff flared up last fall during fall ball? Do you think they're going to be a little bit more conservative with their arms on the roster?
I think they've always been fairly conservative, and I think even if they had a bunch of injuries this past season, I don't think they would allow Landon Marcell and Cole Henry to go out there and pitch in the summer, and even Eric Walker, too. I mean, Eric Walker's coming back from Tommy John. I think he pushed it as much as he could in his first year back. Landon Marcell and Cole Henry, even without the injury, still they logged, especially Cole Henry, you know, logged a bunch of innings this year, had his arm taxed more than he ever did before, considering, you know, playing high school ball. Now, I get it that, you know, you only see the innings pitched when you look at these guys' bios from high school. You're only seeing the innings pitched that they threw for their high school team. You don't see what they may have thrown with their summer teams and whatnot. But, I mean, that might be a part of it. I've always felt that Palmieri has always been fairly conservative with his pitchers. I mean, but is there, has there been an issue in trying to ramp these guys up? They really tried to rely on freshman pitching this season. And I think that is the issue that you have when you rely on freshman pitching, because you're really asking them, they're putting so much more pressure on their arms because not only are they throwing more, they're throwing the better hitters. They're throwing the ball in different environments. Instead of maybe a couple hundred people watching you pitch, now it's at least a couple thousand or 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 if it's the weekend. So it's just a total different environment for these freshman pitchers. And you know, a couple of the guys just broke down. I mean, that's the case. I think if – you know, if they have a guy that's, you know, if it was, I don't know, Zach Hess, I mean, he threw in the summer last year. He had been through college ball for two seasons. He played on the U.S. collegiate team in the summer. I don't think they were as nervous regarding Zach Hess last year just because he had a couple of seasons under his belt. And, you know, if Landon Marcell and Cole Henry pitch well and they stay away from injuries, maybe they'll pitch in the summer next year just because they're a little bit more used to the grind that they just gone through this year. So, and if I'm Palmieri after the last couple of seasons, I'm not testing fate, especially with you know, a guy like Cole Henry who is he was hurt in fall ball and he had these injuries. Now they feel they've resolved the issue. He underwent some laser surgery, got rid of some scar tissue. They feel that might be the problem. We'll see, that might have been the problem. Hopefully it was, and for the next couple of seasons, Cole Henry is healthy on the mound for the Tigers.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, all this kind of trial by fire with a lot of these guys, I think, is going to be such a benefit to the team moving forward, because now you have Marceau, Henry, a healthy Jaden Hill coming back, Eric Walker, and Mikhail Hilliard. So you got five guys, five starters with experience now going to be coming back to this team next season. I know they don't have a lefty. I get that. And I understand they have all the position players they have to replace, but that has to be a great asset for this team, having those guys now going to be veterans moving forward next year, where you have five guys that can be starters for you.
I think it's probably as deep as they have been in a long time when it comes to starting pitching. And don't forget, there are still guys hanging out there like A.J. Labus and Nick Storrs, who, if they are able to get healthy, maybe they're able to contribute to the pitching staff next season. They had a left-hander this past year that didn't pitch at all. You know, he'll be a factor in the pitching plans next year. They signed a lefty in this incoming recruiting class. I'd say for next year, I mean, if they stay healthy, they got a lot of depth there. And that's what makes them, to me, even though I think the position player, and I have no idea who plays shortstop next season, and that's a huge question mark. But you have to feel comfortable with the pitchers that they have coming back. Now the key is: are these guys injury prone? Are they able to get through a season where they're healthy? Next year will tell us that for sure. But it's a good foundation for next year's team to build on, and yeah. Starting pitching is the key to getting to the College World Series. You look at what Florida State has done here. Their starting pitching has been phenomenal in the postseason. That's why they've gone on this great run. You looked at really all the four games in the College World Series this past weekend, and I know the ballpark is not a hitter's park that they're pitching or that they're playing in. But still, low scores, outstanding starting pitching, outstanding relief pitching, and you know you're playing to games of 4-2, 3-2, or 5-4, as the case was last night with Mississippi State beating Auburn, which was the highest scoring game of the weekend. So that's where it all starts, and then I think the rest can kind of figure itself out. But there were just times during the season where the pitching staff was in shambles. They were able to patch it together here, and it would take off for a couple weeks, and then another injury would pop up, and all kinds of shuffling had to occur once again. Next year, hopefully, they have a little bit more of a little more consistency there, and not having to make huge adjustments to your pitching staff, like taking a Friday night starter in Zach Hess and moving him into the bullpen mid-season. You hope that maybe a move like that would catch fire. It didn't, and it's one of the reasons why LSU is back. Their offseason is underway, and they're not participating in Omaha.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Ag Radio right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, you touched on it earlier, and I want to circle back to it. We know pretty much the 3-4-5 guys in the lineup, your power hitters. You know, it's going to be Garza, it's going to be Cabrera, and it's going to be Beloso. Those are your big boppers next year. But we don't know who's going to step up as your leadoff hitter or as your number two hitter or the other guys, the spots that Watson and Duplantis and Josh Smith and Chris Reed were able to handle. Is there more pressure going into fall camp on the likes of C.J. Willis, Gavin Dugas, and Drew Bianco to step up and perform better at the plate? Or is there going to be more pressure on someone like Maurice Hampton, the young man out of Memphis that's going to be a two-sport star for the Tigers?
Well, I think DiGiacomo should be one of your top two hitters next season in the lineup. I mean, he's got the speed. He hits from the left side. I think he does a lot of things well. I mean, he had a productive, I thought, freshman campaign hitting .280. But there is no doubt on, you know, Drew Bianco, C.J. Willis, Gavin Dugas. I mean, those guys need to be productive players next season. All three of them, I think, hit under 200 when the season was all said and done.
Correct.
Maybe Willis was above 200,
yeah, Willis,
but it wasn't.
Willis hit 212. Willis hit 212, but Dugas was 186 and Bianco was 176.
Yeah, so those guys really certainly need to make the next step. And Paul Maneri said it on Thursday that they're not guaranteed, just because they were a backup this season and rode the pine for much of the year, they're not guaranteed a starting spot next year. And LSU is still going to be going out there and looking to try to sign infielders for next season, whether it's the JUCO guys or, you know, there's going to be a lot of guys that once this draft settles out and guys sign somewhere, they're going to be players that are be kind of put back out on the scrap heap to say that, as far as a terminology that some guys aren't going to make the cut. Some guys aren't going to make a cut at LSU. They're about five or six heavy right now. Again, I think a lot of that is going to be some of these pitchers that just haven't been very productive, whether it's because of injury or performance on the field that they'll eventually let go. But I think that you're going to see a lot of pressure on those guys. They need to perform. So, you know, a couple of those guys really need to have big seasons. I think you need to see a big season out of Daniel Cabrera. Too many strikeouts this year. The numbers just weren't there from what you expected in his freshman season. You would hope Saul Garza could continue the progress that he made from late April all the way through the postseason. And, you know, Beloso was a really good player for him this year. A freshman that hits 10 home runs. Only the fifth LSU freshman ever to do that in history? I mean, that's impressive as well. So a lot of guys, the position player battles are going to be really intense to watch, starting in fall ball and continuing and really continuing all the way through February and March.
Jeff, appreciate you making time for us. As always, can you give us a little bit of preview of what you guys are going to have on Tiger Rag Radio this week?
Well, Tiger, I'm on vacation, or I'm heading out on vacation tomorrow, so I'm not exactly sure what we're going to have. James Moran and Tyler Nunez will be handling the show tomorrow night. I'm sure
you got to watch out, Jeff. You got to watch out about Tyler Nunez. I mean, we have him as a regular guest, but you got to watch out for him, man.
I know. But I'm sure they're going to start, talking football and recapping baseball and talking College World Series. So expect that kind of information on Tiger Rag Radio on Tuesday night.
Well, Jeff, appreciate you making time for us as always. Enjoy the well-deserved vacation, my friend, and we'll talk to you when you get back.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
That's Jeff Palermo, the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, joining us here. Making time for us before his vacation. He's not even going to be co-hosting Tiger Rag Radio, but yet he made time for us. We appreciate him.
We might have to do him a solid and maybe give him a day here or there soon.
Give him a day. We'll just make a phone call. Like, hey, this is Cody and Ray over at 103.7 The Game. We're an LSU affiliate. Can you make sure Jeff Palermo has a day off?
I've tried before. They keep telling me, try again later. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's sarcasm or not.
Well, we come back here at RP3 and Company. Well, Houston Astros talk. They got clobbered yesterday by the Toronto Blue Jays. Any concerns? We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. The Houston Astros series with the Toronto Blue Jays ended on a sour note Sunday afternoon on Father's Day, as the former Houston Astros minor league ball player, farmhand Trent Thornton, shut down the Houston Astros lineup, allowed only 6 singles and 7 strikeouts in 6 2/3 innings, while teammates Freddie Galvis and Teoscar Hernandez struck 3-run homers in a 7-run 6th inning in a lopsided 12-0 win over the Astros. Thornton, who was part of the Houston Astros farm system, is now 2-5 on the year. They won the finale of an 8-game Houston homestand after dropping 2 in a row. So the Astros still take the series. It just ends in lopsided fashion against a former guy who was part of their farm system. Now, if you remember, Thornton was selected in the fifth round of the 2015 draft by the Houston Astros, but the Astros decided to trade him last offseason rather than expose him to the Rule 5 draft after electing not to put him on the 40-man roster. So congratulations to the former Houston Astros draft pick for making a name for himself. Gets a win against the ball club. He's got to feel pretty good about that. As for the Stros, look, despite the lopsided defeat where they gave up 12 runs on 14 hits, they're still 48-24 overall. Okay. Josh Reddick, he was 2-for-3 yesterday, had himself a decent day at the plate. Alvarez, the young man, the rookie from Cuba, the 21-year-old, they had him do DH and left field yesterday. He went 0-for-4. The pitching was not great. Peacock was okay. 5 innings of work. He gave up 4 runs on 5 hits. He did strike out 5. So that's a less than mediocre performance. But Perez came in and was rocked for 7 runs on 7 hits in 3 innings of work. So, yeah, that's not what you want to do. Once again, it's that bullpen giving up big numbers. As great as this Astros team is, that bullpen, when they lose in spectacular fashion, and the bullpen gives up huge numbers. Is that something to be concerned about? I don't know.
The key, I think you said it there, when they lose, they give up big numbers.
Yeah, when they lose,
but
it's true.
When they lose, because they, before this 12-0, shutout loss, that's not good. No bueno. But, I mean, you did take the 2 first games of that series there.
Correct.
You still won the series. So, I mean, it's hard to be upset about. You never want to lose 12-0, obviously. That's always,
and you don't,
a bad look.
Right, and you don't want one of your bullpen guys to give up 7 runs.
Right. Those are always bad things. But
That's not a confidence booster.
No, it's not. But when it comes after, winning 2 out of 3 games, or winning the first 2 games of the series, you don't get the sweep. It's a little easier to take, I think, is what I'm trying to say. It's a little easier to swallow that 12-0 loss when you're coming off of 2 wins prior.
You are correct, sir.
It's just a little, because it's still 12-0, but a little easier.
Astros are back on tonight. They're playing at the Cincinnati Reds. No pregame tonight. We'll have bumper-to-bumper sports from 4 to 6:10. The good brother Ben Love's going to lead you right into first pitch for Astros at 6:10 right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back, Andrew Lopez, Nolo.com, joins us talking Anthony Davis trade right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Right now, it's time for us to head out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline. He covers the New Orleans Pelicans for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. He's one of the best in the business. It's Andrew Lopez. Andrew, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm good, man. I got one question. I was listening to that promo. Where do you have all these tattoos of all these guys at?
That'll be a discussion for off the air, Andrew. That'll be a discussion off the air, Andrew.
All right. That's what I was thinking you'd say. So I'm going to just leave it at that then.
Thank you, Lopes. Let's talk about the news over the weekend. I know following your reporting, you kind of anticipated something happening over the weekend with a trade of Anthony Davis to take place before the draft, at least the framework of it to be in place by Monday. Sure enough, it popped over the weekend. Your initial thoughts about the trade, Andrew, of sending Anthony Davis to the Lakers in return? The Pels get Alonzo Ball, they get Brandon Ingram, they get Josh Hart, they get this year's number 4 pick, and then they pretty much can control the Lakers' draft picks for the next 5 years. Your initial thoughts on the trade that David Griffin was able to pull off?
Considering everything that surrounded this trade, meaning how Rich Paul kind of leveraged the situation, how he made it clear that AD was really only going to go to New York or L.A., he tried basically everything he could to zap the leverage that the Pelicans had considering that, it's still a pretty good return for Anthony Davis that David Griffin just got. I mean, you ended up getting essentially the same deal that you were getting back in February. You flip Kyle Kuzma for basically the number four pick in this scenario. You get two extra picks, and then you get the rights to swap some picks, and then even a deferment on a pick. If you don't like that 2024 pick, you can push it back to 2025. Considering all of that, it's got to be a win. You didn't really have that much else. Once he made it very clear that Anthony Davis was not going to re-sign with Boston, you lost a lot of your leverage. You still had some because the Lakers had to get the deal done. So you didn't lose every bit of leverage, but you were kind of operating at from a bad position. To say that he was able to get everything, you have to like the deal. Even if you don't like necessarily the pieces that he got, say you don't like Lonzo because he can't shoot the ball. Okay, you still have to be excited about what you're building because you got young guys that you can build around Zion.
We're talking with Andrew Lopez of Nolo.com and the Times Speaking Union right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, can you explain all the dynamics of this with the date being in June or July and the fact how that affects the cap space? There's some confusion there when people go, okay, so the trade is done. Well, there's a deadline and there's certain dates that are involved. Can you kind of break that down in layman's terms for us, please?
Yeah, the Pelicans get another win is how this works out. So if the trade were to happen July 6th, which is what it's supposed to be, that's when the moratorium ends. It could have happened before the deadline, but you're going to operate on next year's salary basis. So it's not done right now. What that does is the Pelicans have a little bit of a win right there because the Lakers were trying to chase a superstar. And by virtue of this, they cannot. They will not have the right amount of cap space. The only way they were going to be able to do that is to wait until July 6th. To July 30th. Because if at that point you could have signed the free agent and then traded for Anthony Davis into your cap space and everything was going to be fine. Waiting until July 30th does not help the Pelicans. The Pelicans are looking to flip that number four pick that they just got. If they can, for them to flip it, ideally they would like to be able to do that right away. They don't want to keep that other team waiting. So for them, there's no reason to wait. They don't have a reason to wait. And I think, by it's already out there at July 6th. It seems to already been agreed upon to be happening July 6th. If the Lakers want to try and say, okay, well, we'll give you, we want to wait till July 30th so we can sign a max free agent, Pelicans have no reason to wait for that. So I think if that does happen, you might end up seeing, maybe another asset thrown into this deal.
Talking with Andrew Lopez of Nolo.com and the Times Speaking Union here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. What do we expect? You mentioned it in just now, Andrew, is that they're looking to probably shop that number four pick. I know I already saw reports Atlanta Hawks seem to be a team that's interested in that slot. Are they looking to get a veteran player akin to what David Griffin did when he was the GM of the Cavs when he flipped Andrew Wiggins and got Kevin Love in return? And that ended up doing pretty well. Is he looking to get that kind of a caliber all-star player, maybe with one of these guys from the Lakers in the number four pick? Is that what he's looking to try to do with that?
I think what it sounds like now is he's really, honestly, kind of looking for the best possible deal. I know that kind of sounds like a cop-out a little bit, but that's really what he's looking for. So I've heard reports that, he could possibly be looking at, trying to flip the pick for a veteran. At the same time, you've heard that, well, maybe he gets extra draft capital from the Atlanta Hawks, who have, I think, 8, 10, and 17 in the first round. Maybe he uses what he gets from the Atlanta Hawks to then send to somebody to get a young veteran. There's a lot that he can do right here, and I think that's why you can't necessarily fully grade this trade just quite yet, because you still have to kind of wait and see exactly what the Pels get from the entire deal right now. The deal is not done. I was told that almost immediately once the trade went down. I was told that they were not done. There was more to come, and you know we're going to see what that is. And it does look like it's just going to be flipping at this point. That four pick for some extra assets.
Talking with Andrew Lopez of NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, this is something that I've brought up, and I want to get your opinion on it as a guy who's been covering the league for a little while. We heard coming out of Los Angeles that Julius Randle was not a guy that they wanted to have moving forward, that he wasn't a good enough player to be part of the franchise. And he comes and he nearly averages a double-double and becomes a very good player, maybe not an all-star, but a good NBA starter for the New Orleans Pelicans last year. We heard D'Angelo Russell, even though he had some feuding with teammates, that he liked leadership and he wasn't good enough to be a Laker. He goes to the Nets, becomes an all-star, and helps lead them to the playoffs. By the way, his guy that was part of that and helped run that front office is now the GM for the Pels. Could we look back and I know a lot of people are like, well, Alonzo Ball, you know, he can't shoot. And Brandon Ingram, you know, he really hasn't developed. And Hart's not that good. Could it just be that the Lakers don't know how to develop their guys, and these guys may be better than everyone thinks based on what we've seen with Julius Randle leaving the Lakers and what we've seen with D'Angelo Russell leaving the Lakers?
It does seem that way right now. And I don't want to say that it's not developing their players. But I think what you can look at is the fact that maybe when you leave there, first of all, when you're leaving there, let's look at D'Lo first. You know, when D'Angelo left, there was a lot going on. There was a locker room incident with Nick Young, with, you know, the video and all that kind of stuff. I think I remember him making fun of that in a Foot Locker commercial or something. But I remember it was just really, really funny at the time. So he had his own issues, but these guys are getting jettisoned away from L.A. when they're 23 years old, 22, 21 years old. So you look at Lonzo. Lonzo right now is 21 years old. Brandon Ingram is 21 years old. When Julius Randle left, he was 23 years old. D'Lo was younger than that. So part of it, I think, is these guys just maturing and kind of coming into their own a little bit outside of L.A. You know, I don't care about what their record has been the last few seasons, which it's been pretty bad. But these guys are in L.A. I mean, it's still – when you play for the Lakers, that's still a lot of pressure. I don't care if you're actually winning or losing right now. It's still pressure to play in Los Angeles on a grand stage. You look at – both Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball's numbers from a year ago when that team had Julius Randle and they didn't have LeBron James, both of those guys were, you know, a lot more efficient. They were a lot better. Ingram shot a lot better when he didn't have LeBron out there. When LeBron was with the injury, that's when Ingram's production went up. So I think it's that, I think, more than anything else, than like I said, I don't think it's them not developing their guys, but it's the immense pressure of Los Angeles that kind of just weighs on you.
Talking with Andrew Lopez of NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Lope, of the three guys that come back, who do you like the most? I mean, I Ingram has all the potential. Lonzo's – all these guys play pretty good defense, which I know will bode well. And they could fit in pretty well with what Alvin Gentry wants to do. But who do you like of the three guys, and who do you think is the sleeper of the guys? Is it Hart?
Yeah, Hart's definitely the sleeper, and Hart might be a guy I like most in when all is said and done. I like those types of players. I kind of wanted Hart in the original deal when everything was being kind of talked about, and Hart wasn't in that deal, I think. I wanted Hart in that deal. I think he's a great 3-and-D guy. I think he's exactly what the Pels have been missing for a few years. So I was all in on Josh Hart being a part of that deal. When you step back, I kind of think that Ingram is, I'll say this, it's weird to say it, but Lonzo, you know what you're getting with Lonzo. I don't think you really know what you're getting right now with Brandon Ingram. You know that Brandon Ingram is a good player. You know that he could be a potential all-star, maybe even a potential superstar down the road if he gets some things together, if he gets his shot selection down, if he gets, just learning the game down. But to me, I think he's the guy who there's just a lot of variance. He could end up being the guy. He could end up being just another Andrew Wiggins-type player who scores and you don't want to really give a second contract to. But to me, when still, I still like Lonzo because I like what Lonzo could be in this lineup. I know there's a lot made about Lonzo and, you know, where he's at with everything, and he can't shoot and he can't do this. He's still a really good defender, one of the best guards in the NBA. That gives you a lot of flexibility, which you could do defensively between Lonzo, Drew, and Zion. So I think for me, I got to lean to him being – I'll say this. He's the most intriguing – or he's the safest. Ingram's the most intriguing, and Hart's probably the guy who's just going to fool everybody with what he can do.
And he's also the guy that's already repping Pelicans gear and asking about the best beignet places in New Orleans.
Yeah, he made sure to embrace the team real quick. And I remember there was some guy like, oh, what is he supposed to do, keep his Lakers thing up? And I was like, yeah, man, that you cannot embrace the place you're sent to. You can just be like, okay, it's a job, it's whatever. I mean, he went all in day one. I mean, he was at a Fortnite Pro-Am tournament. For all your younger viewers, listeners out there, you can explain that later. And he already had a shirt on. So good for him, man. I mean, he was able to kind of embrace that team early. He didn't kind of run from it. He's like, all right, this is my new team now. Let's get it done.
Lope, appreciate you making time for us. As always, keep up the terrific work down there at NOLA.com. And Tom Spicchione, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
No problem, bud.
It's Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com. Tom Spicchione breaking down Anthony Davis' trade to the Lakers for us right here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll close out today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber. That's 133 and 1133 in high definition. I want to take a moment to thank all of our guests that came on today's show. Jarrett Rozier from TigerDetails.com giving us the latest updates about LSU football recruiting. It never ends these days. Used to not be that way, but now it is 365 when it comes to recruiting. I also want to thank Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio coming down, giving us his final thoughts on the LSU baseball season. And then, of course, Andrew Lopez from NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune giving us his insight on the Anthony Davis trade to the Pels. And you heard what Andrew had to say. He said the Pels aren't done. David Griffin is not done. They're going to try to flip that number 4 pick into something else, possibly another player, a veteran guy. They're going to make some other moves. This team is not done. They're going to be aggressive in free agency. They're going to be aggressive with trading players, and they're not done. And he also said and clarified that with the date being set, once again, if they stay at July 6th, the deal in place will be what it is. But that restricts the Lakers with their salary cap space. They're going to try to push it maybe to the end of July. If they do that to free up more cap space for the Lakers, well, the Pels have no desire to do that. They could possibly yet get another asset from the Lakers, whether that's a draft pick or another player. So terrific wheeling and dealing done by David Griffin, the new front office man, vice president of basketball operations there for the New Orleans Pelicans. Cody, we asked the people today on a Monday, not one but two poll questions on our 103.7 The Game Twitter account.
Yeah, they're related, though, the questions.
They are related. They're both Pels related, as obviously Anthony Davis news is dominating the weekend. Give the people what the poll questions are and where we stand right now with the results as is.
I'm going to start off with the first one we asked you. Do you think the Pelicans will make yet another move before the NBA draft? big landslide victory here. 79% of the people are saying yes, the Pels have something else up their sleeve before Zion Williamson officially becomes a member of the team. We'll see what that move is, but everyone seems to think, or at least 79% of the people seem to think that is the case.
So they still feel they're going to be making another big move?
At least another move. Whether it's big or not, I guess that's up for discretion, but okay. Another move for sure. And then the poll question that I'm more interested in between the two, we want to know, are you happy that LaVar Ball, not Lonzo Ball, is coming to New Orleans? This one, not so happy from Pels fans. 67% of the people say no, they don't want LaVar in the city. I think welcome LaVar to the city, because as soon as he says something dumb, that whole city is going to turn on him like he has never seen before, and I would love to watch that play out. That's just my humble opinion.
I can't wait to see LaVar interrupt a second line celebration and have that go terribly wrong. Just saying. Make sure to tune in tomorrow. We'll have another tremendous show for you on Tuesday from 6 to 9. We'll have our good friend Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's going to join us, give us his thoughts, recapping Saints mini camp, and also give his insight about the New Orleans Pelicans situation. And also, we'll have an interview with one of Acadiana's own, one of the best to ever do it, LSU national champion, Super Bowl champion with the New Orleans Saints, the one and only Devery Henderson, will be joining us tomorrow. So make sure to stay tuned for that. Up next, Dan Patrick Show, followed by the Jim Rohn Show, and then followed by the Jordy Hultberg Show, right here on 103.7 The Game.